well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. We're going to be talking about suppressors today. Loud and clear, by the way. Knox Williams is going to be with us from the American Suppressor Association. We'll talk about the new language coming out of the Senate in the One Big Beautiful Bill that not only encompasses suppressors, but short-barrel rifles and shotguns, any other weapons. The taxes and registration requirements for all of those items would be removed under the One Big Beautiful Bill, at least the current language of that legislation. But we'll also talk with Knox about another issue with suppressors. This one, a legal case, U.S. versus Peterson. Wrote about this yesterday at Bearing Arms with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals taking a very unusual step in withdrawing an opinion that had been formally issued back in February. And this three-judge panel on the Fifth Circuit, which declared that suppressors not protected by the Second Amendment, and George Peterson should be convicted for possessing an unregistered suppressor. They're now withdrawing that opinion officially, which is a very unusual step. What it means, we don't quite know yet, but we'll get into a little bit of speculation with Knox Williams. Also want to alert you to something going on today in the Rhode Island Senate Judiciary Committee. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now, a semi-auto ban on the move, passed out of the House, got assigned to the Senate Judiciary Committee, where all indications are the committee members are split on this. They're deadlocked. If that is the case, then this bill would die. Senator Valerie Lawson, who is the Senate president, denied a request to move the bill to a friendlier committee last week, but she said she was working on something because she's a sponsor of this bill. Yesterday, we saw what that something is. Amendments to this bill that would slightly narrow the scope of the gun ban. As originally written, this was essentially a state-level version of the GoSafe Act. Every gas-operated semi-automatic firearm that could accept a detachable magazine would be banned, at least long gun. Now it looks more like an old-school, quote-unquote, assault ban, right? So it's got a features test. Semi-automatic firearms or semi-automatic rifles that can accept a detachable magazine with one or more of the following features would be banned. There was originally a registration requirement, so existing owners would have to register their guns with the state. That was a non-starter. Mario the Rooster making an appearance for the first time in several days. So they amended it, I believe, in the House to make it sort of voluntary, right? You could register your gun with the state police, and that way you'd have proof that you possessed this firearm before the ban took effect. Now that language has been removed entirely from the Senate bill. Still doesn't make it good enough. I mean, we're still talking about bans on some of the most popular and commonly owned firearms in the country. Mario is very, very upset about this, as am I. So I am hopeful that the Senate Judiciary Committee is not going to bite on this quote-unquote compromise language and that the bill will be defeated. But again, a key vote scheduled for this afternoon, so we'll keep you up to date at bearingarms.com. All right, right now let's get to our conversation, not with Mario the Rooster, who is very talkative today, but with Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association. Take a look and a listen. Knox, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Cam, thanks for having me back, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we were just talking right before I hit record here. There is a lot of stuff going on in the legislative arena, in the legal arena. Let's start with Capitol Hill. The One Big Beautiful Bill, of course, passing out of the House with language that would remove suppressors, essentially remove suppressors from the NFA, right? The taxes and registration requirements, they're gone. We see the language come out of the Senate Finance Committee that now includes language from the Short Act. So not only would suppressors be covered, but short-barrel rifles, short-barrel shotguns, any other weapons, those taxation and registration requirements would also be gone. Now, there's been some talk, Knox, about the suppressor language not appearing in the Senate Finance bill, but that's more of just an administrative issue, right? I mean, that's not the Senate Finance Committee saying we're going to take all these other things out of the NFA, but we're going to keep suppressors on the NFA.
Yeah, so really it's kind of conflating two separate sections of that provision. So suppressors are being removed from the purview of the National Firearms Act, along with short barrel rifles, short barrel shotguns, and any other weapons, or AOWs, as they're commonly referred to. So that part is locked in, that is airtight. The part where there was a drafting error is in relation to the code section that references state statutes. So there's a number of states that have kind of poorly drafted language when it comes to NFA items like suppressors, where it says, you know, you need a license or a permit, or it needs to be registered in compliance with the National Firearms Act. There's different variations of that sort of text. When we wrote the Hearing Protection Act back in 2015, or helped write that with Representative Matt Salmon at the time, and his office, we identified that problem and we wrote a provision that basically said, hey, if state statute references the National Firearms Act, then those conditions are deemed to be met, essentially is what it says. They took that language, our best guess is, from the SHORT Act, which, has similar language to the Hearing Protection Act. And they just forgot to add suppressors to that. So, we spoke with folks on the Senate side who assured us, look, that was a drafting error. We're going to get that in, so don't worry about that. And, we're very confident that they're going to follow through on that.
Now, this was language released by the Senate Finance Committee. Has a formal vote been taken by the committee yet?
No, and our understanding is that there's not going to be a vote by any of the committees in the Senate. They don't want to give the Democrats an opportunity to grandstand like happened in the House. So this is going to come up on the floor of the Senate for the debate.
Okay, so at this point, you've seen no indication that this language would be taken out before the Senate votes on it.
Hopefully not. I mean, that's certainly our goal. The one hurdle that all of this has to clear is the parliamentarian, or what's called the bird rule, or the
Right.
bird bath, which is basically the parliamentarian. Someone's going to call a point of order, a Democrat, who's going to say, hey, this is out of order. This is not germane to the reconciliation process, which effectively says that it needs to produce a change in revenue. It has to be a tax change. And our argument is that the NFA in its entirety is a tax. It lives in the Internal Revenue Code. It's called an NFA tax. It's the transfer tax that you pay when you buy these. And the NFRTR, which is the Federal Registry for these items, is nothing more than a record of taxes paid. At the end of the day, we're very confident. Congress debated it and justified it as a tax. The Supreme Court in 1937 in Sinzinski v. U.S. Justified it as a tax. Actually, Chief Justice Roberts referenced it in 2012 in Sebelius in the case that was talking about whether or not the Obamacare mandate could live as a tax. And he referenced the Sinzinski case saying that, whether or not it has an impact on policy is irrelevant if it's a tax. So we feel very confident in our argument to the parliamentarian that this is germane. It is a tax. It does produce a change in revenues and outlays. We're feeling good about it, but that is the big hurdle that we need to clear.
Yeah, and I mean, I gotta say, I think it is a. I think not only is it a strong argument, I think it's the right argument,
Yeah.
and for all the reasons that you laid out. This was put in place, to make it more expensive to purchase these items, right? And the mechanism to do that was this tax. The registration requirement is essentially, a record that you paid that tax, right? It's not necessarily a record that you own one of these items. It's a record that you've paid that tax. So, if the tax goes away, why would the registration requirement be in place? Again, I from your lips to the parliamentarian's ear, and hopefully we get that done. And then, if this bill survives in its current form in the Senate, then the House obviously has to agree to some changes. We can probably talk about that a little bit later. But I gotta say, Knox, I mean, I'm very encouraged by what we've seen so far. And I would encourage gun owners to, contact your senators, contact your representatives too, because there is a reason why the SHORT Act language was not included in the House, right? And it appears that there were a couple of Republicans who were not in favor of including this language. So we might have some work to do when this bill gets back over to the House, even if it remains as strong as it is right now.
Yeah, look, we're definitely going to have some work to do, and that's okay, right? I don't think that we should let that deter us. I think you're absolutely spot on. We need to keep the pressure up, let our elected officials know that this is an issue that we care deeply and strongly about. And again, if this thing passes the bird bath, look, like this is all part of the one big beautiful bill, which has so many components that, I mean, it's just a very complex, complicated, omnibus package. Which plays to our advantage. So, from my perspective, that's a very good thing. The big issues have nothing to do with firearms, which is, it plays well for us. And I think, too, one thing that's very important to note is that, yes, this would remove, suppressors and triple rifles and AOWs from the National Firearms Act, but they will still be regulated as firearms under the Gun Control Act, which means that if you're going to buy them from a dealer, you're still going to have to fill out a 4473. You're still going to have to pass the exact same background check. And that's a factor or a differentiating factor that the anti-gunners have really been trying to latch on. Oh, you just want all these items without background checks. Well, that's a bold-faced lie, and they
Yeah.
know that. And I think that that's something that we all to push back on and just say, hey guys, you know, if you want to call a spade, fine. But trying to debate this with misdirection and lies and propaganda is not really the way to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, I think there's a strong argument to be made that suppressors should not be treated as firearms
I
under
agree.
federal law, but they are, even under this bill. And you're right. I've seen some bold-faced lies, as you say, from groups like Giffords and Brady, asserting that, you know, if this language passes, essentially, you know, you could walk into a gun store, buy a suppressor off the counter, right? And that's, I'd love for that to be the case, but that is not going to be the case. It is, however, going to be much improved if this language is in place. Now, I mentioned the legal arena, too. There's a case out of the Fifth Circuit, U.S. versus Peterson. And this is a, this, Knox, this is really fascinating here. So in February, the Fifth Circuit three-judge panel comes out and says, no, George Peterson's conviction for possessing an unregistered suppressor, that's fine because suppressors aren't protected by the Second Amendment. They're not arms. The Justice Department comes out with a brief. Mr. Peterson then wants an en banc appeal to the Fifth Circuit. So the government comes back and says to the three-judge panel, hey, listen, we think you got it wrong. We think that suppressors are protected by the Second Amendment, but Mr. Peters' conviction should still stand because the taxation and registration requirement are just modest impositions on our right to keep and bear arms. Now we see the three-judge panel withdraw its opinion, which I have to say I've never seen that. I'm sure it's happened before, but I've never seen it in 20-plus years of covering Second Amendment litigation. We don't know if the Fifth Circuit is going to grant this en banc request. We don't know if they're going to wait for the three-judge panel to reissue its opinion. We don't know what's going on here. But this is really unusual. I mean, on the one hand, I'm glad that the Trump administration has acknowledged that suppressors are protected by the Second Amendment. On the other hand, this argument that, well, the $200 tax and the registration requirement, those are just modest impositions on the right to keep your arms. That's scary language to me, Knox. That could open the door to all kinds of taxation and registration requirements.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think in the full context of this, it's important to note that this DOJ under the Trump administration is probably the most pro-Second Amendment DOJ that we've ever had.
Yeah.
Right? You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. We can't expect these folks whose guns aren't their primary issue to necessarily understand all the nuances the way that we do. So I find it incumbent upon us to teach them, to train them, to engage with them. And to this point, I mean, the fact that they were willing to come back and say, hey, we got it wrong on suppressors, right? I don't love the fact that they say that, you know, the NFA is good to go because it imposes a modest burden, but they nailed it on the fact that suppressors should be and are protected by the Constitution and by the Second Amendment. And that is a massive step forward, the biggest step forward for suppressors in terms of DOJ recognition that we've ever had. So, you know, I want to make sure we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater on this. And giving those guys, you know, Chad Mizell, Pam Bondi, and the folks over at DOJ the credit that they deserve, while fully recognizing the fact that, look, you know, we've got some more work to do. They've got some more learning to do, but they're moving in the right direction. And they've been incredibly pro-Second Amendment. And for that, I think they deserve our praise.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, again, the first time in history that the Civil Rights Division has been used to investigate Second Amendment abuses by going after the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. I mean, we have seen some great work. And I mean, listen, I'm going to be really honest here. I think there is a tendency, no matter what administration we're talking about, to defend existing federal statute,
yep,
to ask the federal government to give up some of its power voluntarily. That's a big ask, right? And so, you know, this may be an attempt by the DOJ to thread that needle, right? How do we support the Second Amendment while at the same time not, curbing our ability to, you know, exercise our authority? And as you say, I hope that this education continues because this is one area where I think that the federal government doesn't need to be exercising that authority. And I know that the DOJ brief did try to carve out an exception, make it, you know, to try to say, well, it's different for suppressors. It's different for NFA items. $200 tax and registration requirement would not be constitutional if we're talking about, you know, handguns or even AR-15s. I'm just concerned that argument is going to be sliced and diced by anti-gun judges, by anti-gun attorney generals, and they're going to say, aha, look, the Trump administration says it is okay to tax these things. It is okay to require registration, and I don't want to see that can of worms opened up.
Couldn't agree more.
So, and again, I mean, that's kind of out of our hands right now, right? This is all in the Fifth Circuit. We don't know what the Fifth Circuit's going to do. What would you prefer? Do you have a preferred outcome here? Would you like to see this case go en banc? Would you like to see the three-judge panel get another crack at it to see what they say the second time around?
Ooh, look, I'm not directly involved in this litigation, so I can't speak, as informed as I think that I should. I think that the conventional wisdom is we'd love to see this go en banc. But at the end of the day, really what we want is a good decision out of these judges in the Fifth Circuit, right? So how we get there, I care less about, just as long as we get to the right spot.
Absolutely. All right, Knox. Listen, man, I really appreciate you coming on the program. It is always good talking with you. Any final thoughts, any final message for gun owners right now?
Oh man, it's an exciting time. There's a lot up in the air. Keep the pressure up on both the House and the Senate when it comes to this reconciliation package. Let them know that you care about suppressors. Let them know that you care about SBRs and their removal from the National Firearms Act taxing scheme. Keep it civil, but keep it firm. If we all stick together on this, then I'm confident that we're going to be able to pull off a win.
There you go. Knox Williams, President and Executive Director of the American Suppressor Association. Thank you as always, and I look forward to doing this again very soon.
Kim, thanks so much, man.
And thanks to Knox for joining us on the program. We will be having him back maybe after the bird bath process has taken place. Right now, let's turn our attention to a bird brain in the Chicago area, along with our armed citizen story, our good deed of the day. We'll get started with this recidivist report. Here's the headline. Let's see. This is from the Lake McHenry Scanner newspaper. Convicted felon on GPS monitoring found with loaded gun during traffic stop in Gurnee, Illinois. The convicted felon in question, Cedric L. Jones Williams, age 30 of Chicago, who was asleep at the wheel with a cup in his hand in the middle of the road, apparently, without its hazard lights activated. This was back on June the 7th. When police arrived, they noticed a odor of alcohol from Mr. Williams' breath. He had bloodshot, glassy eyes, and slurred speech, according to the arresting officer. The liquid in his cup smelled strongly of alcohol. He refused standardized field sobriety tests. He was placed under arrest for driving under the influence. Search of the vehicle revealed 1 or 2 grams of cannabis and an almost empty bottle of vodka. Also, he was in possession of a loaded Glock handgun with bullets matching the ammunition in the magazine of the firearm, also found in his adjacent pocket. Now, this guy has a suspended driver's license, no FOID card, no concealed carry license. In fact, he's not allowed to possess a firearm because he's a convicted felon. He's on probation right now for domestic battery out of Cook County. He was wearing an ankle monitor when he was arrested, which shows the uselessness of those items in actually keeping track of scofflaws and offenders. Jones Williams, a convicted felon because of an armed home invasion back in 2013, so 12 years ago. Don't know how much time he spent behind bars, but obviously out now. The local state's attorney, or at least the assistant state's attorney, Savannah Holcomb, told the Lake McHenry Scanner that Jones Williams poses a real and present danger to the community, saying that he chose to carry a loaded firearm that he's not allowed to possess in his pocket while driving under the influence. He was drinking inside of the car to the point he was sleeping while parked in the middle of the road when officers found him. The defendant's actions and background show he will not follow any conditions of pretrial release if given him, and no conditions of pretrial release will mitigate the real and present threat that he poses. So they filed a petition to detain him pending trial. A judge, however, denied that request and released him, placing him on, quote, level 3 pretrial services monitoring. So basically another GPS device, I guess, while ordering him not to consume drugs or alcohol, not to possess weapons. He is scheduled back in court on July the 10th for a preliminary hearing. And again, I mean, this is just astounding. You've got a guy with a pretty lengthy criminal history, violent criminal history. And he's caught again, allegedly drunk behind the wheel, asleep behind the wheel, passed out, maybe is the best way to put it, behind the wheel of a car in the middle of the street with a gun he's not allowed to possess, already on probation. And a judge says, nah, it's fine. We're just going to, we're just going to make sure that GPS monitors on you. So I guess if you get into trouble again, we'll know where you are. I don't get it. I don't get it. But this is the soft on crime state of Illinois, and so we get stories like this, unfortunately, all too often. Now, today's armed citizen story from the not exactly gun-friendly state of California. A Simi Valley homeowner shoots and kills intruder later revealed as his ex-wife's boyfriend. Yeah, this is a scary situation. I'm glad that it ended well for the homeowners. It was early this morning, about just before 1 o'clock Wednesday morning. Officials with the Simi Valley Police Department said they got a shots fired call from a neighborhood. 6 minutes later, they got another call from a homeowner saying that they had shot an intruder after a confrontation. Simi Valley PD Sergeant Rick Morton told Fox 11 in Los Angeles the female was reporting that her ex-boyfriend had broken into the residence. The current husband confronts the ex-boyfriend, and at some point there was an altercation where the shooting occurred. The suspect taken to an area hospital where he was declared dead after first responders arrived at the scene. According to Fox 11, the couple had had multiple issues with the suspect at the home. The woman had actually taken out a temporary restraining order against this man in the past. There were two children inside the home at the time of the incident. Husband was interviewed at the station Wednesday morning. The wife and children were taken away, according to Fox 11. Again, I mean, this is California, so anything can happen. But based on the circumstances that Fox 11 described, this would be pretty clearly a self-defense case, a justifiable use of force, unless you've got some overzealous prosecutor out there who wants to try to make an example of this armed homeowner, which, again, I'm not discounting that possibility. So we will keep our eyes open for any more details out of a Simi Valley and hopefully a quick resolution for this case in favor of the armed citizen. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a Iowan who helped to save a man who had spent about 7 hours in a ditch after he crashed his motorcycle. Jeffrey Sunken said he remembers being really cold and shivering. He said it was making it harder to breathe and making the pain worse. He doesn't remember the crash itself, but he remembers waking up in the ditch. He was unable to cry out for help. He could wave his arm, and he was trying to do that to get attention from passing cars. But according to KCCI, it wasn't until the early morning hours the next day that somebody noticed. A guy named Oliver Garcia said he'd been waving his arm around, and when I seen it, I got a little scared because it's not something you want to come across at 3:30 in the morning. But he said that he knew calling for help was the right thing to do, so he called 911. And Sunken was quickly taken to a local hospital in Perry, Iowa, before he was transferred by air ambulance to a hospital in Des Moines. Diagnosed with a brain bleed, had a collapsed lung. Sunken has been trying to track down Garcia, according to KCCI, to thank him in person. They haven't met, but they do plan to reconnect soon. And both Sunken and Garcia, according to the TV station, emphasize the importance of paying attention to the road, taking action when something seems amiss. Sunken says, you know, as miserable as the most scared I've ever been in my life, and I've been around a little bit, but I am thankful and in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. I've talked about this before, but I completely agree. I was driving back from Richmond one night, and just as I'm driving down the road, I noticed this orange light blinking in the woods, and I drove by, and I thought to myself, well, that really looks like a hazard light. And it looks like a hazard light in a place where no hazard light should be. So I did. I stopped my car. I turned around. I drove back. And sure enough, there was a car that was pinned between two trees on its side. I have no idea to this day how the driver was out of that vehicle. And mostly unscathed. In complete shock, she was. But I was the first one to come across her, called 911, got her the help that she needed. And it would have been real easy to just... It would have been real easy to miss that blinking hazard light, because there was just one, like I said, off in the woods. And it would have been real easy to just think, somebody's trail camera, maybe. I don't know what's going on, but, can't be a car. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. And she was, I think, able to get the help that she needed. Never learned the outcome, but she was alert and walking around when I last saw her. So I hope that she was able to recover from any injuries. But again, yeah, just be aware. When you're, out and about, and if you see something that does seem amiss. Unfortunately, we also see cases where, like, Good Samaritans get carjacked, Good Samaritans pull over to help somebody out, and all of a sudden they get assaulted. So be on your guard, but yeah, be willing to lend a helping hand if need be. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I really do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Not sure who our guest will be. We may just kind of talk about the week in review, but either way, we'll be here. And be sure to check out BarryandArms.com throughout the day, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.